Hello everyone, my name is Jeff Hancock and welcome to the CoinParts podcast. We talk about blockchain, crypto, fintech and trading. And today we're talking about something very special, which is fundraising and crowdfunding. Today with me is my guest is Andrew Adcock, who's the founder and CEO of Crowd for Angels. Crowd for Angels is an FCA regulated crowdfunding platform who've been helping companies raise funds since 2014, including various blockchain projects. So Andrew, thank you very much for joining me.
Thank you for having me.
Awesome. So we've known each other in the space a little while, right? Kind of two, three years now in the UK and fundraising space. Tell us what you've been up to in the most recent months.
Yeah, certainly. So I think everybody's had their schedules and sort of plans turned on their head by COVID-19. But for us, actually, we've used it as a bit of a development time. So naturally, traffic did slack off to the website. So we felt we could build some things at the back end. We upgraded the infrastructure layer that's behind our platform. We initiated a token buyback scheme for holders of Angel tokens. And we looked at deploying a custodian facility for holders of crypto on Crowd for Angels. So in the future, hopefully, people will be able to store their stable coins with us and transact in stable coins, which I think is really exciting.
Oh, great. And I suppose, you know, just as you touched on it there, you know, a lot of 2020 has been consumed by COVID, by the pandemic. And I suppose, what has crowdfunding looked like for businesses that were, you know, trying to raise at the beginning of the year and still trying to execute? Is it still going on?
Yeah, certainly. So, I mean, it has changed considerably, but what you've seen is positives and negatives. The negatives are, you know, the what I call the consumer investor, that sort of mum, dad, and the people who purchase the product, they've fallen away because they really need to keep a handle over their cash and they don't want to be spending at this moment in time. But then you've seen a great uplift from professional investors and shareholders in companies. And the UK government, to be fair to them, have put out some interesting schemes, including the Future Fund, that has allowed tech businesses to essentially raise money and then match fund it with the UK government. So if I raise £125,000, the UK government will give me another £125,000, which is great for businesses and cash flow. As you know, startups burn through cash. So the more you can get, the more you can do and the further you can get along. But what we've also seen is businesses really focusing on the fundamentals. So stripping back costs, focusing on delivering a product rather than just marketing a product and, you know, working hard to build up connections. I think during the last 4 months, the greatest thing I've seen is actually relationship building. People willing to have a conversation and work with sometimes competitors. You know, we've been speaking in the UK Crowdfunding Association about how we can work with one another. And that was unheard of in 2019. They were your competitor. You were vying for the same customer. But in 2020, you see a benefit of working with each other and sharing a potential consumer.
Yeah, for sure. No, I definitely agree with that. I mean, yeah, even on our side where we do, you know, we do the fiat to crypto kind of translation and exchange trading. And while there's been a, you know, there was a huge surge in trading around kind of the March, April time, and it started to plateau and kind of cool off a little bit around the very, very same reasons. Retail traders are kind of, you know, kind of saving their cash and make sure everything kind of keeping their jobs. There's more important things out there than trading crypto. But the professional institution ones out there and other platforms that we're, you know, that we talk with quite a lot, even on this podcast, there is a lot of information sharing going on there about, you know, what are we kind of experiencing the most during the COVID cycle, you know, highlights in, you know, new fraud rings that are starting to come out and take advantage. You know, those kind of, you know, information sharing, I think, between different sectors and different competitors is definitely there, which I think is, you know, a really good, healthy sign for the community. Let's just kind of roll back, I suppose, to kind of like maybe 2017, 2018, and it's kind of more of an opinion piece on for yourself, Andrew, but ICOs, IEOs, kind of token sales versus the traditional, you know, crowdfunding, you know, A, fundamental differences, but kind of mostly what do you feel really went wrong?
Yeah, it's a funny one. I think we all got caught up in the hype, but if I was going to say it was anything, it was two things, greed and laziness. And I was a culprit in that. I mean, in the November 2017, for instance, I invested in, I think, 27 or 29 ICOs. And why I say greed and laziness is because people were making so much on the uptick of Ethereum, Bitcoin, the sort of grandfathers of crypto, if you will, that they were trying to then deploy their funds anywhere and everywhere. And so rather than, studying products or projects in depth, we were just throwing money at them because where do you put it? I mean, I was out in Dubai for a conference and, I saw a pitch on stage and 5 minutes later I'd invested only a small amount, a few hundred pounds, hardly anything. And that token is now down 90%. And to be fair, what did I do? I did no due diligence. I watched one pitch. I didn't know the team. I just thought it was a cool concept and I should get behind it. So that was one of the critical failures of that stage, that we saw the price rise up and people were trying to, purchase anything and everything to catch that rising tide, rather than sort of listening to their head and going, hey, what are the fundamentals of this business? What is its product? Where will it sell it? Who are the people behind it? Why are they raising so much money? And you remember the days, companies weren't raising a couple hundred thousand or £1 million to develop a product. They were raising 20 million, 30 million, 40 million. I mean, that project that I invested in, I won't name them, they raised £25 million.
Wow.
What for?
Yeah.
We don't know. And what you saw then in 2018 is that they had all this cash, but the fundamentals didn't align, and you started to see burnouts. And there's been some really spectacular cases that have raised, 17, £18 million or dollars, and within 2 to 3 months they've spent the cash, and there's no fundamentals behind the business. I mean, for our business alone, we've been around since 2012, but in the market since 2014, and we're not profitable at this moment in time. And if we spent cash at the rate of some of these ICOs, we would have been bust by 2015 for sure. And so that's where I think a lot of people just forgot their head, and they were just started investing in their heart and really pushing it around. So that's why I said it's greed because they want to make more money. And laziness because we forgot the fundamentals and trying to look at what should we be investing in.
So it's definitely more of a punting versus investing. And I think,
Oh,
just like you
absolutely.
say, you saw that pitch on stage, and a few minutes later you'd invested. And I think that there was definitely, I think for me, the cool factor of it is that you could be lazy and you could be greedy, and you can get involved in a project like that, exceptionally quickly. The friction in getting involved kind of on that level, and the liquidity at which you could get in and out, during that uptick and that upcycle. I didn't do 27 to 29 ICOs during this period. I might have done maybe 12 or maybe 12 or 15, maybe. Yeah, still a fair bit. I managed to exit, I'd say, most of them. There's probably still a few kicking around in small wallets, but I think after the initial big pump and a little bit kind of on the way down, I managed to take most of them out in ETH. But there were some of those days where you were riding the lift from the lobby to the fifth floor, and you'd see like a 2% change in your portfolio. And it was that time of like exactly like you say, laziness and greed. But just that kind of tech layer, that getting involved, where you could have a bit of Ethereum or some stable tokens on your mobile wallet via a MetaMask if you had your laptop with you, and you can get involved with a project that quickly. Is that, do you think that technical trend is where crowdfunding needs to go in order to capture a bigger audience?
Yes, I mean, I've been an advocate of the blockchain for a number of years now. I mean, the first project we did that was blockchain based was back in 2014, and we had crypto payment gateways by 2016. I mean, probably to the FCA's horror, but we did show it to them. We demonstrated how it could be recorded and done in a way that complies with any sort of regulation. I think the benefit, of course, is that you could transact around the world at any time within a few moments. Where the negative is all the sort of off-chain or off-ramps that you currently have to go through that are really slowing down the process. So, if we look at KYC or AML, for instance, there isn't a globally accepted platform at this moment or a protocol. So, you have to use a provider. The provider has to run the data, and depending on if you're doing an automatic check or a document authorization check, That could take anywhere up to 24, 48 hours. You know, that's slowing down the whole process, and that's before we've even committed any funds. And then when we start committing funds, you know, regulation as a whole says that you shouldn't really hold it in crypto. You should have converted it into some sort of fiat. So you need an off-ramp, you need a custodian solution. It all adds up to costs. And I think there is this disconnect between what crowdfunding is trying to be in using technology, because fundamentally we are a technology layer between a company and an investor, and what we can do by regulation. And it's a tough, you know, discussion between regulators, companies, investors on providing something that can be trusted and useful to the ecosystem without burning down those bridges and creating what the ICO phase was in effect. Because, you know, early in those days, if you wanted to invest, even an email was optional. You just had to send your Ethereum, and that would, you know, buy X amount of tokens, and they were delivered to your wallet. So there was no checks or controls, and there was really no barriers to entry. So a 10-year-old could get involved, and a 60-year-old could get involved. And this is, you know, we have to try and make a more sensible approach to it. I mean, there is a concern at the moment right now. You're seeing these sort of DeFi products and coming out, and these products that can stake a ludicrous amounts. You know, I saw one the other day that was something like 100% a year, and it's just not fundamentally correct. So how do we address those problems?
Yeah, the DeFi, what do they call it, yield farming, going in and out of leverage products exceptionally quickly to capitalize on moves, borrowing a large amount of ETH or borrowing a large amount of stable tokens and rolling in somewhere else and moving through these various products to kind of find, you know, the most optimal loop. I have read a lot about it. I do find it very, very interesting. But I think the, you know, the risk and leverage involved is a little bit beyond my risk appetite. So I definitely love learning about the DeFi stuff, but it is, yeah, like you say, it could be one of the next bubbles we talk about, right? And I suppose you kind of touched on it there with the friction layer to you know, the investor, to the company getting involved. I suppose from the type of investors that Crowdfund Angels kind of attracts, and the funding raise that you do. You know, is there an appetite for, you know, for blockchain businesses and for those types of businesses that are doing traditional equity fundraising opposed to doing just tokens?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, when we started off, actually a lot of the interest was coming from Northern Europe, and you did see the Netherlands and places like Finland get involved in the fundraisers on Crowdfund Angels that were blockchain-based products and projects. But what we then saw is sort of 2015, 2016, you had more high net worth and sophisticated investors looking at projects and being interested. Before then, you saw the catapult that the ICO put in there. And during, you know, 2016, 17, the sort of investor profile, if you will, went from a 47-year-old male to a 26-year-old male, you know, working out of his bedroom and just wanting to get involved. So we did see the appetite of the individuals, you know, excel and change in terms of a profile. But what was more interesting is to see one where the projects were starting to come from, because suddenly you had places like Estonia, UK, Africa, developing projects that you hadn't seen before and really trying to embrace technology. And you started seeing investors from outside of the European Union, you know, Asia particularly, wanting to invest into these projects. And I don't know whether it's, you know, they feel that the European Union is a bit more of a safe haven to access good quality companies or not, but that's what we sort of really felt. Now, obviously the crypto winter came, and investing in blockchain projects, you know, late 2018, early 2019, really just wasn't cool. People did not want to invest. They'd seen the price of crypto completely crash.
Or felt the burn as well.
Yeah, and they'd stopped lending their money. Now, what we've seen in the last sort of 3 months is Bitcoin and Ethereum prices go up. Actually, Bitcoin's been quite stable, certainly in the last 90 days. And we're getting that appetite again from traditional investors and these new, more modern tech investors come back to blockchain-based products. And we've certainly seen an uptick in the number of companies looking to raise money for their blockchain application. the nice thing is, of course, is that it's started to be more fundamentally led. So their equity or their debts, they've either got a product in place and they're looking for marketing capital to develop, you know, customer bases, etc. And they're more thought out projects. They're not just saying, well, the world's our oyster. They're saying, actually, we're targeting the UK and we're targeting this particular audience because they're not served by current companies. But there's still a lot of, I guess, difficulties that we're going to have to overcome. For instance, very recently, you know, there's been a big conversation about Ethereum gas prices and how the high gas price is really off-putting people from transacting in Ethereum. And it's becoming more like a, you know, sort of gold reserve where you're simply making savings on it.
Yeah. Well, they're saying like gas transaction fees now are starting to, you know, outstrip the poking stick, which is Bitcoin, you know. And maybe it's because of, you know, Ether starting to run out of its, you know, out of its headroom. You know, a lot of the DeFi products and the yield farming is probably contributing to that. But then we've also got ETH2, you know, on the horizon, moving over to proof of stake. So that's just a whole, you know, a whole new layer of how does that change the economy? How does that change the products that are already on there? Does it fundamentally, you know, ruin the economy for those miners that have been running Ethereum for, you know, God knows how many years? And it's just probably what I like about the space the most. It's constantly evolving. And, you know, now we're kind of resetting the narrative in terms of investing, resetting the narrative in terms of fundraising. And now, you know, that chapter isn't even finished and we're resetting the narrative again on the tech level that all of that stuff runs on. It's kind of an impossible kind of thing to keep up with, but it's always good fun. And I suppose lastly,
but what I like, just to jump in on that, is interestingly enough, you've noticed a shift in the conversation from, you know, what my blockchain product does to how can we make this consumer friendly, so people don't really have to see the technology. There's always technology. I love reading about how the Ethereum Association are trying to develop new protocols in places, you know, having a base fee with a tip, if you will, but not trying to push that onto the end consumer and develop consumer apps. You know, use this debit card just like you would a normal debit card, except it's DeFi. And I think that for me in the next 6 to 12 months is going to be really interesting as we make that shift. And I guess with COVID, actually, everything's been sped up a little bit rather than normal consumers transacting in cash, they're now actually being asked to use digital payments or online payments or cashless payments. And so they really do have to shift gears to who is the best provider of those payment.
Exactly. I couldn't agree more. And, you know, what do you think the future looks like for kind of startups and crowdfunding? Is it, you know, pure, you know, like you say, traditional equity kind of crowdfunding with, you know, equity debt? Is there still going to be, you know, a position there for using token-based issuing to raise funds? Do you think that's a possibility in 21, 22?
Yeah, I think we all hope that in 2019, STOs, security tokens, would have really lifted off and carried on the ICO boom, if you will. We haven't seen that, but we are now starting to see more products or projects deploy tokens as a way of fundraising, but as a security. So it is pegged to an asset, essentially. Equity is going to be around, but we're seeing consolidation. Rather than there being hundreds of platforms or individual companies raising money for themselves, they are trying to rely on, you know, these sort of centralized bases of investors on crowdfunding platforms like Crowdcube, Seeders, CrowdRangers, for instance. But I think token projects, 2020, there won't be too many. 21, 22, I think we'll start seeing them. And that's also because at the back end, platforms are taking more interest on, for instance, shareholder registries and things of that nature. And I think that's going to be an important shift. When we start seeing blockchain-based databases for these sort of legal matters, then you'll see that tokens really do form part of the ecosystem and make more sense.
Exactly. And I suppose one last question, this is probably, you know, handing some of your knowledge and wisdom for CrowdFrangels down to, you know, the audience that's watching this. How does a startup or a founder really nail, you know, a crowdfunding round? What are the kind of the fundamentals they need to address in order to make that round hugely successful and potentially overfunded?
Yeah, I mean, it's a really good question. And the projects that I've always been interested in have a few, you know, elements that I think work throughout. So one is clear communication of, text and images, really just don't do it. Having a video where you can talk or show your product is going to be more helpful. Two, if you can, have a product ready. I mean, I know it sounds silly, but if you don't have your product ready, what are investors actually looking at? They have to then be sold on the idea. So having the product shows what you're trying to deliver. Three, have a good team. I know you might not be, you know, the oldest person. You might be a keen 18-year-old, but that doesn't mean that you can't go out and talk to people in the industry that you want to enter into and see if they can join you, even if it's an advisor. And I think they're the three things I look at more than anything. I think that always leads to a good project as well, because you've sold the idea, you've got a consumer in mind, and you've got a team that can deliver.
Definitely. That's awesome. So, I mean, it's a really great point to end the podcast on today. I mean, Andrew, thank you very much for your time and coming on and sharing your knowledge and talking about this, you know, insanely huge topic. We may need to do a follow-up on this towards the end of the year, or, you know, what's new for 2021. I look forward to that. And just a last few words, how do people get in touch with you or with Crowd for Angels if they're looking to do a crowd round of their own?
Yeah, certainly. So if they want to get in touch with me, you can find me on Telegram just at Andrew Adcock. Alternatively, come to crowdforangels.com and you'll find all the different links to find me and talk to me.
Great. Thank you very much, mate. And that kind of brings the podcast to the end for this week. If you'd like to be a guest on our show in the future, reach out to us at podcast@coinpass.com. Drop us a tweet at CoinPass Global. And as always, I want to thank my guest Andrew for being on the podcast today, and stay safe out there, everyone. Thank you, Andrew.
Thank you.